Hello, and welcome to the 12th episode of Let's Talk Iran, providing Iranian-American perspectives on current events and policies that shape U.S.-Iran relations and affect the Iranian-American community. This program is brought to you by the National Iranian-American Council, otherwise known as NIAC. I'm Novar Elmi, and I'll be your host. I'm here today with Malfred Brat-Heghammer. Malfred is an expert on the Iraqi Weapons of Mass Destruction program and is an assistant professor at the Norwegian Defense University College in Oslo. She is also an accomplished author and was able to join us from Norway to discuss one of her recent New York Times pieces entitled The Real Lesson of Iraq. Thank you, Malfred, for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
In your recent New York Times article, you paint a picture of parallels between Iraq's former nuclear program and the current Iranian nuclear program. Specifically, you talk about the role that hidden or non-verifiable information played in determining foreign policy. Can you talk a little bit more about what you meant by this? You know, how did information, or the lack thereof, help lay the groundwork to invade Iraq in 2003, and how does this relate to the current situation in Iran?
So what I was trying to do in that article was to draw a line between policy debates on how to deal with the Iranian nuclear program with past debates on the Iraqi nuclear weapons program. And the reason is that lessons from Iraq are often cited by both analysts and policymakers when they discuss how to best address the Iranian nuclear challenge. And what I was trying to point out is that there are two problems with drawing those parallels. First of all, the Iranian nuclear program today is much more advanced and robust than Iraq's nuclear program was in 1981 when Israel attacked the reactor complex called Osirak, and arguably also in 1991 when the Gulf War interrupted the Iraqi nuclear weapons program. The second problem is that the lessons from Iraq are still disputed in the scholarly community. And so for me, an important question is, are we actually drawing the right lessons from Iraq for dealing with Iran? And I do think that Iraq's nuclear history does offer some lessons for how to deal and how not to deal with states that are suspected of developing a nuclear weapons capability. One such lesson concerns the extent to which intelligence information can be helpful and whether it can actually be misleading in some contexts. So in the case of Iraq, during the 1990s, United Nations disarmament agencies were able to account for Iraq's past nuclear weapons program. By 1996, the IAEA had largely explored what had been going on in Iraq and made sure that that the program had been dismantled. However, during the 1990s, the international community detected many attempts by Iraq to hide information about the past programs, as well as actual equipment and documents. And so this gave rise to the impression that Iraq was always going to hide something, that there would always be something left to find in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And so this suspicion, combined with the use of intelligence information that they couldn't always independently verify, this gave rise to fears that Iraq still had a nuclear weapons program, or that it actually wanted to reconstitute such a program in the future. And so as a result of all this, while the facts on the ground suggested that the Iraqi nuclear weapons program had been dismantled long ago, by 2002, virtually every state was convinced that Iraq retained the option or was trying to reconstitute its past program. And so in Benjamin Netanyahu's reaction to the IAEA report on the 8th of November, he criticizes this report and cites the grounds that it's only based on information that the IAEA can independently verify and does not include intelligence information. And so Netanyahu suggests that the real Iranian threat remains hidden. And so my concern about such claims is that they actually can obscure the facts on the ground. that Iran seems to be sort of slowly edging toward a nuclear weapons capability, but that it doesn't presently pose an imminent proliferation threat. And so, if anything, a key lesson from Iraq during the 1990s, at least, is that the IAEA's assessments are actually sound and a good basis for policy debate.
Another parallel that you mentioned is the proposed solution for dealing with the Iraq of the past and the Iran of the present. In 1981, Israel's solution was to destroy an Iraqi nuclear reactor complex as it stood on the verge of becoming operational. And today, we know that the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu claims it is necessary to strike against Iran now because it may not be possible to carry out such an attack once the underground enrichment facility is fully operational. Did the targeted attack work in Iraq, and will such an attack work in Iran?
Well, those are very important questions, and a lot of people have been debating those questions for quite a few years now. Well, I've actually studied the Iraqi nuclear weapons program extensively. I wrote my PhD about this program, and I would argue that the sources that we have now suggest that the Israeli attack of 1981 was actually counterproductive. So, on the one hand, this attack denied Iraq the option of developing a nuclear weapons program following the plutonium route. On the other hand, the attack triggered a hidden nuclear weapons program following an alternative technical route, namely uranium enrichment. And so, within a decade, by the 1991 Gulf War, Iraq stood at the threshold of a nuclear weapons capability. And so, while many Israeli officials have sort of characterized the attack as a success because Iraq never developed nuclear weapons, when you look at what actually happened, it's quite clear that the attack triggered a nuclear weapons program that wasn't there before the attack took place. And so, in terms of the likely impact of an attack in Iran, I would say that Iran today is in a very different place than Iraq was in 1981. Iran has been facing debates about striking its nuclear sites for a very long time now, and it's clear that attempts have been made to ensure that the nuclear infrastructure in Iran is much less sort of vulnerable to an attack than Iraq was in 1981. For example, they have been burying sites and making them sort of less vulnerable to military attacks. And I and several others argue that an attack on Iranian sort of nuclear sites is one of the very few events that can create a sudden consensus in Tehran that it's necessary to develop nuclear weapons sooner rather than later. And so I think that an attack would make the Iranian nuclear challenge much more immediate and much more challenging to deal with in a sort of a shorter time frame than what happened in Iraq.
Okay, so how can we learn from the past in order to prepare for the future? What do you think are the appropriate next steps in addressing concerns regarding Iran's nuclear program?
So I think one important issue to note is that the Iranian program today looks very different from the Iraqi program of the 1980s, and that there may actually be sort of limited applicability of specific lessons from Iraq for dealing with Iran today. And that's a point that often gets lost in policy debate about sort of non-proliferation or counter-proliferation. In terms of next steps, I think the key issue is how can we influence the Iranian cost-benefit analysis to the benefit of those who advocate nuclear restraint. And so for me, there are sort of four important points that stand out. The first is that a premise for trying to have this sort of impact on debate in Tehran is engagement and diplomacy. And so we've seen recently a bill proposing that it should be illegal for US officials to conduct diplomacy with Iran. And such a step would clearly be one in the wrong direction. So if those in the Iranian government who are keen to pursue engagement and diplomacy are weakened, this could actually work to the advantage of their opponents, who are likely to favor the option of developing nuclear weapons. Another issue concerns the impact of economic sanctions on this sort of nuclear cost-benefit analysis. So there's been recent research by many scholars, including Etel Solingen, suggesting that economic isolation can actually weaken those domestic actors who favor nuclear restraint. And so a concern here is that strict economic sanctions can actually be counterproductive to what the international community is hoping to achieve, which is nuclear restraint. The third point is that it seems to me that the international community may well have to accept the fact that Iran now enriches uranium, and that it will be difficult to persuade Iran to sort of dismantle that capability. And of course, the key issue then is to ensure that this capability is used for peaceful purposes rather than for a weapons program, and to make sure that the Iranian regime continues to believe that the costs of acquiring nuclear weapons actually outweigh the perceived benefits. And the fourth point is don't attack, because I do think that, as I've mentioned, that is one of the few events that could make the Iranian nuclear challenge much more difficult to deal with and intensify the potential threat posed by that program in this sort of short to near term.
Great. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but I really do appreciate you taking, time out of your busy schedule to talk with us about this very important issue.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
As always, please be sure to visit NIAC online at www.niacouncil.org.